Good morning, good morning, good morning, and thank you for joining us on another episode of Face to Face Talk Show. I am one of your hosts, Sharifa Hardy, and we have a very interesting show for you today. Please go ahead and share this show because Face to Face Talk Show is where we have the uncomfortable conversations and we ask the hard questions so that we can make America and this world a better place and we can discuss some of the things that are on our mind. Now, with the presidential election so soon, we know that there is so much to talk about, so much to discuss, but I just want to go ahead and introduce our guest. First guest today is Mr. Lamont Hairston. You'll see him just about every week here on the show, talking about some of the things he's most passionate about, helping the world, helping the children, and his app, the Lens app. Good morning, Lamont. How are you?
Good morning. Good morning. I'm doing well. How are you?
I am excellent. I'm excited to have you here. What's going on in your world?
Well, I mean, right now, like you mentioned, we still have the things going on with the Lens app. And it's the app that's going to allow people to rate and report their experience with police officers nationwide. We've gotten through phase one, so the app is downloadable on Apple right now. We're having difficulty with Google, so we're getting some attorneys to work to get the user agreement and everything situated. And I'm also working to get some grant funding from the school I graduated from. I have somebody working with me at Delaware State University trying to get me some grant funding so we can finish phase two. And that's the phase in which we'll make this app indispensable. So we're trying to make sure we get there.
Fantastic. I love it. Our next guest is joining us for the first time, so we get to hear some of her views and her opinions, Ms. Bree Gunn. Good morning, Bree. How are you?
I'm good. Thank you. How are you?
I'm excited. Got to see where this conversation is going. I always ask people, so I'm going to ask you, are you sensitive, Bree?
No.
She said no. Okay. I'm just making sure.
I probably should be a little more sensitive, but I don't really have that skill.
I know that feeling well. So we're having a couple of technical difficulties. I want to see if we can get him in. We all recognize Mr. Salim Bey, who's joined us on the show about three or four times. Good morning, Salim. Are you with us?
Good morning. Good morning. Can you hear me?
I can hear you well.
The visuals is not working right now. I don't understand why with my integrated piece, but thank God that you guys can hear me and I can hear you guys.
Yes, thank God we are making it happen. Thank you for joining us again today. We're going to have a very interesting conversation. I want to go ahead and introduce my co-host, Mr. Paul Foss. What's happening, Paul?
Hey, how are you? How are you? How are you? Sorry, I'm a little late. You know why I was late.
Why were you late, Paul?
Because I thought no Lamont, no show.
You thought. See, that's stop right there. Just stop.
I'm not supposed to think. I'm supposed to show up.
Yes.
I'm ready to go.
Yes. Yes.
Right, but Lamont goes, I go. It's like the fire department. You go, we go.
Well, I told you I was going to pop in yesterday, whether I'm kind of quiet or not, because I do have this period of time between my classes where I can get set up. So.
Oh, they're testing, right?
Yeah.
So always check up, C. Check C if you don't know. Huh? The answer is always C if they don't know. Just put C.
Not when you only give essays.
Oh, man.
Okay, so enough of the schoolboy chat and all of that.
Oh, wait, good.
No. You're supposed to be saying some words to the people, Paul.
Some words. No, I wanted to, because I only have Lamont for a few, because he's got to jump back into testing. So I wanted to drop a bomb on him and then have him react, and then he can't really react, and then he has to leave.
Okay, I'm here.
So talk to me, Lamont. So from the the side of the world that I sit in, and a lot of the threads I see and people that I see their threads. Ready? Here's the common overarching theme. Black man gets shot carrying a knife by police. Let's go steal TVs. Let's go rob. And I see it over and over and over again. The posts that come out after something like this from a large group of people saying, what the heck is this? What is this? This have anything to do with police brutality? Does it have anything to do with racism? Anything to do with anything other than that's another excuse to go rob. And I know that it, you have real answers and real emotion and real passion behind.
And he does. And he does. Lamont is so passionate about that, but we ain't even going to let Lamont answer yet. I'm going to answer this question for you, Paul, because it sounds to me like you've been doing some research and you've been talking to some people, because that conclusion, who is on your timeline? Whenever something happens, people go steal TVs. Like we explained to the president, the rioters, the looters, and the protesters are different people. They're not the same people. So the people out there protesting are not the people out there stealing TVs.
I know the comments haven't been, hey, you know, there isn't racism. You know, there isn't this. We don't need for reform. They're not equating the two. They're just simply saying, here we go again. An incident happens. A city's going to get burned down and stuff's going to get stolen. The two of them have nothing. It's almost just an excuse to do something. And my feed happens to be, by the way, if you look at my friend group, I have friends on every side of the aisle. Republican, Democrat, black, white, gay, straight, women, all over. I don't, you know, it's just.
So when you look in your feed, you have, because I don't have, I mean, we have different feeds because we have different friends, obviously. But I don't have any of my friends, any of my feed that are saying this happened. Let's go get some TVs. Like, I don't have people who
are. My friends aren't saying that. Let's go do this. They're saying is, here we go again. And a group's going to say, we're tired of police brutality. We're tired of being shot.
Okay.
So I want to talk about it because, as you know, I like to throw things, you know, people will hide behind a keyboard. They'll say things in private to friends or even throw it online behind a keyboard because they can just say a common leave. I want to talk about it because I think, you know, I think it moves some issues backwards and others forward. So I know that I could talk about it here with Salim and Lamont.
Well, I have an answer to your question, Paul, because I thought about that too. And I know you saw my post.
I did.
My thing is, and we're going to take it back. One, I am not 100% in agreement with any of that. You'll never see me supporting looting and rioting and things of that nature. One. Two, just because I'll never let it get out of the way without me saying something about the incident, the direct incident. Because I know mental health very well, and it's coming out now that guy was in a mental health crisis, you don't need to pull a gun to take a knife. You have two officers, one armed man in a crisis. Now I go to the gun range. I can shoot somebody in the knee. I can shoot somebody in the hand. I can pull out a baton, and when you come with your knife, make sure you don't stab me with it. I've disarmed at least two people with knives during my career as a behavioral tech, and I had nothing, and I didn't hurt them. I didn't break nothing, and I didn't kill nobody. They were taken to the ground, and I didn't have a bulletproof vest on. I was wearing rubber gloves. That's all I had at my disposal when I got caught into the situation. He came. He was taken to the ground. I rolled him over his stomach. They stuck a needle in his butt. He was asleep 2 minutes later, and he's alive. So if you train these people right, you can handle those situations because you don't know what you're walking up on, but everything is not a shootable offense. The second piece of that, again, we had this conversation previously. I told you about a video where a guy was attacking the police officer with a machete. He happened to be white. They never shot him. They never pulled a weapon. He was subdued because five people jumped on him. So it can happen. Then as to the rioting and looting, historically, you know that after, and I'm glad we got a historian on here, after emancipation, when Black people started developing their independence and developing their own wealth and separating themselves from being under the thumb, how did they lose everything they had? Rioting, looting, burning. So we were taught to do this out of frustration. That is the way of this country. Even if you go back as far as the Boston Tea Party, they set some fires too. That's the way of this country. So to see larger America now want to lash out because it is the oppressed now coming after the oppressor, that pisses me off to the utmost festivity. It was good in the 1800s, 1600s, 1500s, 1900s, all through civil rights. Everything they take away from us, they've done it through rioting, burning, and looting. So why is it a problem now when the people that have been oppressed for 400 years in this country is starting to lash out and do it themselves? I don't agree with it, but I understand. You can only kick a dog so many times before he bites your ass. And we're in our biting phase now.
Solid points. One, I'll separate the two. One about going after the oppressor. I don't think there's any rhyme or reason for often who gets looted and who gets robbed. Often it's minority businesses, Black, Hispanic, Asian businesses. And I think that has to stop. And then the other point you made about police officers, to me, it's not a condemnation of those officers. It's a combination of the tactics, the training, and the policy. Because we know, anyone who's been around law enforcement, there is no such training where you shoot to injure, where you shoot to, if you pull a gun, you're shooting to kill. Nobody's training to shoot to wing a guy or take his leg. That it's not part of training. As a licensed a gun owner, you know, I'm pretty sure that in New York, it's actually against the law for me to even fire a warning shot. Like firing a warning shot is a violation. Like they don't even want you doing that. So that comes down to training attacks. We don't train officers to shoot to injure. And I can tell you right now, I have trained martial arts better part of 25 years. They are never going to train officers to go hands-on with a knife-wielding suspect. I don't care how good you are, and I've trained a long time. I study Israeli martial arts called Krav Maga. We work weapons all the time. The number one rule that you have when you're going to fight a knife is you're going to get cut. You're getting cut. It's just a question how bad you get cut. I can't go into a knife disarm or an attacker with a knife assuming that I'm going to get perfect technique and get that knife away without being cut. It's, you know, now I don't carry a gun, so I have no choice about being attacked by a guy with a knife. I have to knife defend, but I fully expect that we use shock knives and marker knives, things like that. You're going to get cut, and they're not going to train officers to take that chance that that cut is a femoral artery, is an arterial, an artery that's going to kill you, or it's a plunge in the heart. So I think that this now comes down to training tactics, less than lethal weaponry, you know, as some people have talked about. If we know it's a mental health crisis, dispatching mental health people that understand how to talk somebody down. And those are the things we have to work on. But immediately condemning those two officers in that situation faced with a knife, I'm not there yet.
Okay, so we went in a lot of different directions. We got a lot of information. Salim wanted to speak a couple of times, so I just want to give him a moment.
I apologize, Salim. It's just hard when I didn't see you, so it's harder. I apologize.
It's okay. One of the suggestions that I would tell people is to stop looking at race. Can you hear me?
I'm sorry, I lost you.
Yeah, we heard you.
Can you hear me now?
Yes.
Okay. Stop looking at racism like an event. It's a system. So this system has taken a while to manifest. So when we talk about police officers, we have to remember how police officers started. There were slave rescuers. Every police station in the United States has an oath or a creed where they started out as slave catchers. They were called the militia. That's why the Second Amendment right is so important for these people, because they could defend the country, but they couldn't defend a slave uprising. So let's keep that in there, because that behavior model still presents to this day. When you think about looting and think about riots, the first thing we think about is the Black community, so to say, and they're burning up their businesses. The first thing I ask is, where is their businesses? There is no businesses in that community. They're burning up somebody else's stuff. And most of the time when the riots would happen and this stuff has to stop, we did learn it. Think about Tulsa. White men, white women were getting upset because Black neighborhoods were thriving and they need to find jobs. A white man got accused of grabbing a white woman on her buttocks. They wouldn't let him lynch that man, so they start shooting and bombing and dropping tar out of planes. You're talking about a time in 1921 where there were no airports. So you had to know somebody personally to have a plane. The thing that I would love to say is that rioting, looting, rebelling has been a way since 1492. Or if you want to take the 700s, when the Jews brought in the Moors to fight in the Protestants. So that has always been a European trait. The thing that I found it very, very hard to resist of not getting inflamed about is that when we do it, it's a problem and something needs to stop. Has anybody ever asked the question, why is it happening? Why do Black people not trust the police?
why do Black people not trust people that's coming outside of their neighborhoods? Because every time they put up a neighborhood, somebody is coming in to put up their businesses. I just recently went to the CD. The CD is always known in Seattle as the district that is the bad. That's the Black neighborhood. That's the bad. You need to stay away from there. It's got Starbucks. It's got high rises. It's been gentrified. So when, every time that there's a Black or a brown oppression point, we always say, oh, it's some way we need to include and some way we need to get together. It's never that way. White America has never included anybody else but themselves. They separated when it was Protestant and Catholic. They separated when it was Jews versus English or barbarian or Roman. They've always separated. And they have separated us because that poison has come into our neighborhoods. We can't talk about looting and rioting without talking about the problems that are causing these people to get upset. And I'm not trying to be long, but the second point is, have you ever got angry, Paul? Have you ever gotten angry?
Have I ever gotten angry? Absolutely. I get angry all the time.
Okay, now when you get angry or frustrated or to those levels where you need to act out, do you think, hey, I need to go down the street before I blow up? Or do you just blow up right there on spot?
No, I've never gotten it. I get angry and I take it out of my own ways. I'll hit a punching bag or take a walk and just go breathe. I have never gotten angry to the point that said I'm going to go harm somebody or something. Thankfully, I've never gotten to the point where I've wanted to harm somebody or something.
But that's not the intentions of the looters or the person that is angry. They're angry because something has happened. If we take the 1921 Tulsa riots, white people were angry and they took to the streets.
So, are you telling me, and again, this is, I'm asking both to challenge, to learn, and to expose for conversation. Are people looting actually tied to being angry about the incident, or is it just mob mentality and people got caught up in it and said, hey, everyone's, you know, it's not enough cops, stuff's being stolen, I'm going to steal too.
I think it's a combination. You would have to speak to all those different people. What we know is that there are rioters, there are protesters, and there are looters. Looters typically don't have the same anger and the same mindset as rioters and protesters. Looters are there specifically to get stuff. Right, during the LA riots in 1992, I think it was, I lived two blocks from the intersection where they pulled Reginald Denny out of his truck and beat him. That was where I lived. A lot of things happened during that time, but before that happened, there was so much frustration in the community. Back in 1992, when you try to go to stores where there are more Asian people and other people that don't respect you when you go into the store, but these are the only places that you have to go to buy things, at some point you get angry. And it happens still today because you're giving them your money, you're supporting their business, but you don't even get the same respect in going in their store. And people get mad. And when you get mad and frustrated at some point, not everyone, but people tend to act out in some way. Now, I want to continue the conversation, but Bree has just been so patient. She's been watching. She's been listening. Bree, please comment on anything, especially Paul's questions, since he brought it up about 20 minutes ago.
No, I'm absorbing. It's interesting because obviously I have a lot of privilege. I know that. But watching... I have friends who live blocks from where George Floyd was killed in Minnesota. I have who are in the middle of it. And, she texted me and she's like, I was like, you can come here because it's, people are breaking into people's houses. And I think that looters and rioters are more opportunists. And they make the people who have, the protesters, the people who are peacefully assembling, like that the picture of Burnside Bridge in Portland, it's in a bad part of town, guys. Like, I grew up there. It is not a good part of town. And they use that as an excuse to, for the people who, whichever side you're on, the people that want to incite violence, the people, there were people in my hometown, tiny little town, my graduating class was under 200 people. People from California drove all the way to Washington State and dropped bricks in front of our courthouse. And everyone's like, where, what the fuck? Pardon my French. But there's people like me who, I'm pretty insulated. I get that. I live in the middle of cornfields. There's really not a lot going on around me, but I know so many people in big cities that are being directly affected by this. And everyone I've talked to is saying, you know, the people that are causing the issues are not from here. They are not local. They don't care. And I think that is one of the saddest things. It's the whole, I'm going to go mess up somebody else's world. And
I can hear your pain. I can hear your frustration. I can hear your pain and your frustration. Yeah, I think as people in America, we are all frustrated. I just think, and I really want to go back real quick to what Salim said about why. Why is the frustration there? Again, 1992, LA riots. One of the things that set off the LA riots was LaTosha Harlan. I don't know if all of you are familiar with LaTosha Harlan. Paul, homework, LaTosha Harlan. LaTosha Harlan was one of the people, again, who set this whole thing in motion because she went into the liquor store, which is right down the street from where I was living at that time, and she has some orange juice. The lady who owned it, I'm not even going to mention her race, but she wound up shooting her and killing her because she said that she was going to steal the orange juice. Little Black girl. We went to the same elementary school, and she had the money for the orange juice in her hand. The lady followed her around and everything. Little girl wound up getting killed. One of the things that most people do not know, and that's not public knowledge, but again, I went to school with her. To this day, I'm friends with LaTosha Harlan's best friends. 1 week prior to LaTosha Harlan's being killed, my friend, LaTosha Harlan's best friend, went into the same liquor store. That same lady got an attitude with her. My friend went home and told her mother. My friend's mother told her, y'all do not go back into that store again. That lady is going to kill one of y'all one day. 1 week prior to that lady who owned the store killing this child, somebody had already told her, is the way that we were treated in these situations. And if you go into that area today in 2020, it is still burned down. It is still empty. And people are frustrated because these are our communities. And if they were other communities, because Paul, you talk about your community and where you live and the neighborhood and different things would happen, there's no way people would allow it to remain that way.
No.
A piece I want to add on that too. When you are a Black person in this country and you see over and over and over again how things never really change, like they give you surface change, they pacify us, like, and this is one thing that always gets me, you have everybody lashing out at the athletes who are using their platform trying to express their feelings about police brutality and so on and so forth, and they get ridiculed, but let's not forget, 60 years ago, you wouldn't even let them play. Mm-hmm. You wouldn't even let them in the game. You despise them so much. And now you have them in there and you want to control them like they're a slave hand, even though they're an overpaid slave hand. But nonetheless, you're trying to control people that you didn't want in your game anyway until you realized how lucrative it was. So everything this country has given us has been based on money. They brought slaves over to build the country to make money. They created sharecropping to continue making money. They created mass work incarceration to make money. So white America has done nothing but made money off of us since we got here. And then they act like they really want to give us something when in reality they don't, because of the Constitution. It's in there. We were property, 3/5 of a human being. Until you take that out there, you can't tell me shit about equality.
Hey, I just want to piggyback off that. I heard somebody kick in my keyword Constitution, you know. So, that is that's Section 2, Article 1 that you're talking about, the 3/5 clause. And if you go down a couple more sections, that's when they talk about prohibiting any legal action or legislation until 1808 to stop slavery. So the one thing that reason I'm going back to my question is why? Nobody ever asked the questions of why when they put the narrative out there in those streets, when they're talking about our communities. So if we took those code words that they use and we took them to the way that they're supposed to be, then we would say integration was them giving us permission to join in
instead of, oh, we've come together, we're a melting pot, we've never been that way. When it comes to these neighborhoods of violence, people have to understand that the police started out as slave catchers. That's a fact. People have to understand that after we were freed, there was 85 years of Jim Crow that didn't stop until the 1940s. And that's a fact. People have to forget that racism exists in this country because it's a system, not an event. They always pull up things like Emmett Till, but they don't talk about Martin Luther King when he says he feel he sold his people into a nightmare. It's the code words. Rioters are the same thing as those, that group of women. I'm not going to mention their names, but they were in Portland rioting as well. Rioting means that you're angry. That's all it means. You're yelling, you're in the street. It doesn't mean that you're looting. It doesn't mean that you're pillaging. It doesn't mean anything like that. But we've been so indoctrinated in America that this is what the majority group has done. When they rioted, they pillaged, they loot, they shot, they kill. It's always funny to me that our neighborhoods are always the bad neighborhoods, but nobody talks about the suffragists in those neighborhoods. I think Sister Sharifa showed that there was another person in that community owning a restaurant or owning something that you go to that's not Black owned. It's not Black owned in that neighborhood. So when all of these businesses are being burned down, they say, oh, we're burning our businesses down. We're burning our houses down. We don't own nothing in those. We have neighborhoods. We don't have communities. We don't own anything. Somebody else is getting that payout on insurance. Somebody else is getting the monies from those claims. While we're getting the blame to say Black Lives Matter is a group and they're just looters and rioters. But Antifa is known for going around starting looting. I think the sister Bria mentioned that in her small town, some people from California came up to there. That's what Antifa does. Antifa starts in Europe. When I'm angry, when I'm upset that I have to see George Floyd on the ground for 8 minutes and not anybody say, hey, what are you guys doing or nothing? That reminds me of Queens. That reminds me of Staten Island. That reminds me of all types of different places where cops have choked out people all over the United States. So now I start to get upset. I can't just hold my anger in. I can't just stand on the side and not want to lash out and say something. We have to at these times.
Yes. But
the narrative of it keeps changing that we're not doing anything. We're looters. We're protesters. And that part needs to stop.
Yes.
Sorry.
Okay. No, Let me make one more comment, then I'm going to get my class started because they're
okay,
buzzing.
Go ahead.
Okay. One more piece on the Constitution thing. And this is something we actually covered in class. When you look at an individual as your property for 250 years, and then you're forced to look at that individual as your equal, there's going to be a whole lot of anger and resentment. But the big difference is, and what's going on right now, when they got upset at Black freedom, you had the creation of the mass mobs, the KKKs, and the lynchings went up, the legalized killings went up. Like, this stuff was on the books that they could kill us. We could go to trial in front of a jury and not be allowed to say one word in our defense, and it ultimately ended in execution over and over again. So yes, like he's saying, the system has always been broken. Until somebody balls up to fix this system, it's not going to change. It's going to be a whole bunch of cool conversation, and frankly, we're tired of talking.
Yeah, but Lamont, that's one of Saleem's biggest points that he bring up. He tells us it's not broken. It was created that way. That was how the system was designed. Saleem, am I speaking for you? Am I speaking out of turn?
No, you are speaking absolute truth. I mean, people have to understand that when they came across those ponds, they had missions, and their missions was not equality. Christopher Columbus, Isabel, Cook, any of them, when they put down for the Articles of Confederation, there was no equality in that. When they put down the Declaration of Independence, there was no equality for that.
Yes, Paul, what are your thoughts? Because I know you're over here like, I hear that, I understand that, I'm learning, I'm being open-minded, but how do we fix this? Because people out stealing TVs is not making it better as well.
Right, look, I'm obviously listening, learning, I got notes down about the section of the Constitution, Latasha Harlan, all that stuff. So I'm listening and I am learning. I just wish everybody, my Lamonts, my, you know, I'll say brother Saleem, my brother Lamont, my sister Sharif, other people like the family of the mentally ill person that was killed said, no, I condemn without reservation breaking into a store, stealing a television and shoes. I want to hear every, the family said it. They said, this is not a way to honor our son. Please do not loot. Please do not steal things from business owners. I just want to hear the condemnation, but yes, there are problems. I've learned a lot more, as you know, since being on the show, about systemic racism, about the problems we have. I watched between last show and this show, probably 20 to 30 interactions with police officers and young Black men in vehicles, and watched the way they were handled on YouTube, because you can search this stuff. But I separate out the two. There's anger, there's problems, the system was written wrong. All of this stuff I will hold as true without reservation. I also will hold true on the other side that there's things you could do with your anger. Breaking into a Walmart and stealing a Vizio television I don't.
I hear you, Paul. I hear you. This is a good show today. This is a good show today, Paul. I like you. Whatever energy, whatever little you did today, do that again, because I like that. I like the energy that you brought. To me, it seems like even in asking the question that you did a lot of research and thought and was like, this is what I want to discuss. Because, and I like that. But this is my thing. And I may be wrong, but I'm okay with that. I love my life. I love who I am. It always seems to me that the people who caused the situation, I'm just going to total sidebar, right? Total sidebar.
Bring it.
People have told me, they say, Sharifa, you always tend to overreact. This is what the good church folk people tell me. I call them the good church folk. They say, just because somebody hits you with a stick, that doesn't mean that you have the right to shoot them. That's their justification. So you overreact and they hit you with a stick, now you done shot them. And so my view is that at the point when they hit me with the stick, I can decide to react and respond however I want to respond. So I know there are laws and things you can't do, but it seems to me that we're looking at the reaction as opposed to looking at what's causing the problem to begin with.
Yes.
Okay, look, my issue is that I find there's a disconnect in the two. They're mutually exclusive. We have a problem with systemic racism and with mainly young Black men being treated differently by police officers in many encounters and training and all that issue over here. Communities or people that go, oh, that just happened, I'm going to get myself a television, is another mutually exclusive problem. I look at, the incidents that happened, whether it be George Floyd. I have a different reaction to George Floyd, by the way, being very open, than I do about what just happened in Philadelphia. I have a very different reaction. Yes.
Do you want something today? I don't know what it is, but I'm gonna tell you right now, leave that TV alone, because to me, that's a distraction. That's a diversion. You keep going back to this TV, and I don't even care if this TV was $15,000. The people are being mistreated. And it's not just that they are being treated differently. See, differently is a passive kind of word. You're being treated different. No, these people are being killed, murdered, destroyed. And so when we're looking at the TV, to me, I don't care about this TV. I don't care if they got 18 TVs, honestly, to tell you my God's honest truth, until you fix the problem, because that TV is going to be covered with insurance. You got people who are being murdered in the streets.
Yes.
Okay, look, that is the problem we have to fix. And part of it begins, as we always talk about, with a conversation with people that want to talk. I think that when we see what happens in some of these cities, it moves the conversation back for a lot of people. Like they talk about this election is decided by the undecideds. You know, you have the guaranteed voting for Trump, the guaranteed voter for Biden. There's a huge chunk in the middle that are undecided, which define the election. We have people that will say, there's no issue in this country. There's no systemic racism. The cops are great. And you have people who say, nope, there's racism. Cops are bad. We have a group of undecided that aren't sure where they sit and who they want to side with, right or wrong. I'm not defending anybody, but it doesn't help when there are protests and marches and impassioned speech and conversation like I have with Lamont and you and Salim and Bria. Man, it caused me to go out for the first time in my life at 50 years old and start learning and educating and getting angry, where I sort of said, hey, not my problem. Now I'm angry, but I think that some of this stuff sets back and distracts from the main issue, which is, we have a problem that we have to fix. which is I don't tell my son, I've never told my son once, if you get pulled over, you get your hands up, you make sure you beg for your life or you're going to get shot. I've never had that conversation. That's what upsets me.
Okay, can I say something, Paul? I'm going to let Lamont finish. But, I think because we're in a mood today, Paul, and I'm feeling it, you feeling it is here. I've never had that conversation with my son. My son is 23 years old. My son is 23. My daughter is 26. I've never had, everybody talks about everybody in the Black community. I've never had that conversation at all with my son. My son is responsible. I haven't had to have that talk because I've raised him in a certain way. He understands the police, but everybody doesn't necessarily have that talk. And even when Biden was talking about that, I'm telling you the honest to God truth, since we're real on Face to Face, I was so insulted. I was insulted as a Black mother when Biden had the nerve and the audacity to talk about the talk that Black parents have to make when this man caused more than 3/4 of the problems that the Black kids are dealing with to this day.
Lamont, jump in, babe. Talk to me. When you
I'm going to come since she brought up the talk. Now, of course, we know I've had the talk because the first time I had a gun stuck in my face, I was 15 years old. It's happened at 15, 22, 27, 36. So I'm accustomed to it. I know how to respond to it. I shouldn't have to respond to it. The only thing that saves me is because the time I spent in law enforcement and the fact that I'm a behavior person. I know your intentions when you walk up on me. I understand posturing, the teeth clenching. I can tell what somebody's going to do as soon as I arrive on the scene from 20 years of being a behavioral person. The difference is I talk dummies down and I escalate people who are trying to be super duper reserved. That's what I do in my profession. So when I have an irate cop come, I know exactly what to say to him. I'm going to make him feel like he's in power. I'm going to make him feel like he's in control. And in the back of my mind, I'm saying, I don't know if I'm muted because I'm going to say something crazy.
No, you're good.
I am. In the back of my mind, I'm saying, fuck you. My job is to get home to my wife and kids. So I'm going to make you feel good. I'm yes, sir, no, sir. But in my mind, I'm sitting there thinking, fuck you, pig. I understand you're scared. But my goal is to get home. Everybody's not trained like that. I have to make sure that me and mine understand that process, because the one thing that I can't recover from, and I probably shouldn't say this, but I don't care, y'all know I don't have a filter. If anybody ever does something to mine, there is not going to be a trial. I am a retaliation person, and all of my instincts is going to kick in from all of this anger, and I'm a revenge person. Yeah. I come directly from enslaved people. I can't track my roots. I'm a Harrison, the biggest slave plantation in Virginia. There was 10,000 of us. We don't know if we're related or not. So if you take what I know that I am related to, I got to get you. I'm not waiting for a court of law. I'm not calling the cops. I'm going upstairs and getting that banana clip, and somebody got a price to pay. Yeah, and I don't want to be like that.
And it's sad that people have to be like that. I watched a clip yesterday of young Black man, I'm going to go 20s, and got pulled over for potentially rolling a stop sign. And, had his camera on, and the officer came up with his hand on his gun. Ready? But this young man, he was having none of it. He was, oh, why the F are you coming up to me with your hand on your gun because I might have rolled a stop sign? And he was, and I probably used to watch those clips a year ago. I was like, okay. I watched it with anger because, that's an escalation. Now, the kid in the car was justifiably angry that a guy was walking up with his hand on his gun over a stop sign incident. And I could see how the escalation could have caused a much more serious situation. You have an angry guy in a car getting agitated. Maybe, as you know, Lamont, you get agitated, your hands start moving in places. You start doing this. All of a sudden, his gun comes a little bit higher up. The guy goes to get out of the whatever. And now we have a deadly incident. So it angered me when I saw that interaction. Whereas before, I probably would have said, well, that sucks. I was actually angered. That I saw, and I started watching more and more of those because, maybe it's only the ones people post, which is why, again, I got a friend of mine putting out an app that will be a great thing. I wish she would come on the show sometime, because I think in that instance, that video clip with that app, with that officer's name, shows the difference. And I watched another clip, very similar clip, but another officer came over, happened to be another white officer, looked at the situation and pulled the officer back and basically was like, what are you doing? Like, I got this. So I think that, again, I hate to be shameless plug, but that's where this app is going to come in real handy, because this one incident on YouTube shouldn't have likes and dislikes. It should have reporting and retraining or firing.
Absolutely. Yeah. I'd love to hear from Bree.
No, I 100% agree. I'm in the same post or same position. A year ago, 6 months ago, it's sad. Okay. But it doesn't directly affect me. It's not, which sucks to say out loud, but you know, we all have our things, right? I've got two boys. I have to talk with them about keeping distance from girls because God forbid one of them says something or does something. You know, it's the level at which our society has decided to escalate to at this point is borderline ridiculous. Everyone, and yes, there are things we should be offended about. Yes, there are things we should be angry about. Police brutality absolutely is uncalled for and unnecessary. And every police officer needs mental health training, period, end of story. And then the people who go into policing for the power, that's the other half of that problem. I have cousins who are police officers because they can wield power over people, which is super, super messed up. And just all of it, having to bring up kids in this world, having to explain to them why one person's life isn't valuable, having to explain to them why, because I don't shield my children who are 6 and 10 from the news. I don't shield them from political stories because I want them to be educated. I want them to have the thing I didn't have growing up where, you know, yeah, we watched the news, but nobody was ever sat us down and said, this is how this is. This is, you know, I led a very sheltered life. I've moved all over the United States and it doesn't seem to matter where I go. There's always problems. And the people who are trying to fix it aren't really trying to fix it. They're just trying to mitigate the damage. And nothing is going to change. No laws are going to be enacted or enforced because we can't even fix the problems as they are. Adding another layer, you know, obviously the Constitution needs to be updated. That's a huge issue. But adding another layer to that, it's not going to make it better because people's attitudes aren't going to change. Just because there's a law on the books, you know, there's laws that say don't loot, people do it anyway. There's codes of conduct and safety procedures and body cams and all these things. And police officers are still, the bad eggs are still hurting people. So at what point do we all take a step back and go, how the hell did we get here? Whatever you believe, this is beyond ridiculous. It is gotten to the point of being tipped so far in one direction or the other. You know, you have to be so careful about every word that comes out of our mouth. We have to be so careful about every interaction. And, you know, I have been compared to a bulldozer in a China shop. I love you hard and I am your friend and I'm going to be in there for you. And I don't really couch my words. And I catch myself biting my tongue because if I say that out loud, how am I going to be viewed? This is a white woman who's freaking blonde hair, blue eyes. I have, for all intents and purposes, I'm golden, but I'm also only second generation American. So, you know, my family came over from Italy. My mom was the first child born here in the States. You know, but that doesn't matter. That pales, you know, it's like someone like me saying, well, that's nice, but I'm not the same color as you. So that doesn't affect me. We all need to start treating people like people again, because we've forgotten that we're all human beings. Like, you all are amazing, amazing humans.
Well, thank you. I hear what you're saying. And I think I hear a lot of frustration in your voice. And it's so funny because one of my closest friends, I love her to death. I've known her for years. Her name is Karen. She's a white girl.
Yeah,
that's what I'm saying. Karen is having a hard time. I mean, she's having a hard time.
I think that's mean too. Like, why pick a name and make that person the bad person? Why can't we call them Voldemort?
I mean, but it's still a name, whatever the name it is.
Right. That we're getting. I hope no parent has named their child Voldemort. If they have, then we probably need to have a talk with them.
I don't know, but I think what you're verbalizing is kind of the same thing that she verbalized, is that now she's feeling the brunt of it and she's feeling the attack, because when she says something, not just her, but when white women, I mean, because we on face to face, say something, like you said, they may have to think, okay, well, can I say this? Can I view this? But what I look at it is this. It didn't start this way. I think it goes back to my initial point that I was making about the person hitting me with a stick.
You said it shut down?
It's the reaction, it's the response. So what you're receiving is the feeling that people have been harboring for years. So me as a Black woman, when I hear you say, what I'm hearing you basically say is the same thing that, I forgot his name now, but when he said, can we all just get along?
Rodney King. Yeah.
Rodney King.
Right. So, Salim, you're jonesing to jump in too.
Yeah, I know, but I just want to finish this point real quick. So that's what I'm hearing you basically say. It's like, again, why can't we all get along? Why can't we all be nice? You know, and I did a panel when they were basically, they had me speak on a panel. They asked me 2 weeks prior to the panel to speak. I agreed to speak. And the night before the panel, they emailed me 20 questions about race relations in America. One question mentioned the words African-American. What can we do to help the African-American community? There were 19 other questions that were basically like, how can we make this world a better place? How can we all, you know, and I told them, as soon as we went live, if you wanna have a conversation, let's have a conversation. If you wanna talk, let's talk, but we can't kumbaya this. Because to me, what I'm hearing you say is that let's understand what you're going through and what people who have caused this pain are going through. That's what I hear, if that makes sense.
Yeah, that makes sense. And it's hard because I feel like we're all of us as a collective human society are picking up the pieces of other people's bad decisions. And then there are the rest that are like, meh, I'm not a garbage collector. It's fine. I'll leave it. Mm-hmm. And
but if you're picking up the other people's bad decisions, see, this is one thing I think that white people, European people, Caucasian people, whatever you call them, I think this is the point that they miss in all of this, because you look around and what you see is 2020. You look around and you see the world that we're in today. You can't see slavery. You can't see systematic racism. So it's not something that exists in your world. But what has happened is the result, the benefits of slavery have still been passed on through different lineage for most people. So it's not an equal playing field. So maybe you didn't go through that experience, but you have still, like, because you came on the show saying you were privileged, you know? So it's the privilege has the anger. Salim?
Yeah.
I understand where you guys are coming from, but there's a couple of points that I disagree with.
Oh, we can see you. I forgot.
And it's not that you guys are Caucasian or you guys are a lighter pigmentation that I disagree with it. The part of it that I disagree with, it has to do with the indoctrination through education, okay? We always go through these moments of like, how can we fix this? How can we do this? Where did this start? We know where it started. We need to start being real and start being unfiltered. We know that a group of people came over here and killed and murdered other people. That's a fact. A large part of people of our population right now, the first thing that they'll say is, well, my people weren't here. We came after slavery. You know why you came after slavery? Because of the Homestead Act of 1830, because of the land that they were given away. Do you know, think about it like this. Abraham Lincoln, let me tell you something that just kind of shows you the analogy of what we've been doing. Every February, we do this holiday called President's Day. George Washington and Abraham Lincoln. And they're looked at as the fathers of America when America was so great and things like that. George Washington was the highest owning slave owning president. He's the highest on that list. Out of the first 12 presidents, 10 of them owned slaves. The only ones that didn't was John Adams and John Quincy Adams, but they made fortunes off of slavery. My family is from a little area called New York, where we were born in Virginia. The native side of me is from Virginia and Eastern Carolina. Do you know just in 1790, they shipped 1.75 million pounds of cotton? New York made 40% of that, of the monies off of it. So we're talking about people that we put into these high regards, George Washington and Abraham Lincoln. Okay, well, we talk about Abraham Lincoln like he just loved slaves and he was just going to free all of them. Well, he didn't. In 1861, he gave $1 million+ to the property owners who owned slaves in Washington, D.C. for losing property from the Civil War. He paid them. So that's reparations, right? We look at affirmative action. Affirmative action in 1830 when they did the Homestead Act, the Indian Land Removal Act from the first Democratic president who was named Andrew Jackson. That is a fact. But when it comes down to giving something to us that is owed, General Sherman sat down and marched to, was it Mississippi or Alabama or somewhere where he met with a caucus of Black people that said what they wanted. That's where the 40 acres and a mule came from. White people have never kept their promises. And there's always an excuse to not, excuse my language, to get your ass whooped. Because you forget that the story has been so filtered that we put these people up and we make it seem like that they just cared and things. No. Everything Lincoln did, by the time we got to Rutherford B. Hayes, it had already been panned out. We had the Ku Klux Klan come, especially in New York City, up until the 1940s, where people that like, what was Hillary's lady that she loved, Margaret Sanger? The lady from Planned Parenthood? The one that had a Black agenda? The one that funded eugenics? See where I'm going? It's always so bright and so neat to see the world in 2020 where you can just, oh, I'm aloof to it all. I don't need to see that. Can't we just get along? No, we can't get along until somebody views you equal. If I had a girlfriend and I beat her every day and I kept things to show her these beatings, and then I say, you know what? I'm not going to beat you anymore. But every day I show her something that has to do with those beatings, how is she going to heal? So that's when I see a Confederate flag. That's when I see schools, buildings named after known racists. When I got to see them on the money that I spend, I see those known racists. But nobody says anything about that. That is a horror. It is a psychological thing. And that's why I keep trying to tell people this system was designed the way it was designed. Racism is a system, not an event. And we got to start telling the truth. There is no possible way that I could look at my children or any of you guys' children and tell you that racism doesn't exist, that this was not the plan, that it is not going to stop until white people are going to sacrifice for this. And I'm not trying to call them out on it, but when you control the past, you control the future. But when you control the present, you control the past. That was said by George Orwell in his book of 1984. All right. And then people want to bring up Jesus. So I want all the Christians to look into the Luke, find the chapter, I think it's like 2 or 3, where Jesus said, bring me my enemies and I will kill them in front of you. That doesn't sound like a passive aggressive guy.
It's yes. I hear you, Salim. I want Bree to just respond real quick because we're running out of time. This is a good show. This is a good show. But
no, this has been an awesome education for me. And it's hard because they don't teach history in schools anymore, and they whitewashed the crap out of it when I was going through, you know, and it's been eye-opening. You know, you don't realize how sheltered you are until you talk to people who have poor education about something. And that's, you know, stretching yourself is important, and stepping into someone else's shoes is important. And I think if we could do more of that, you know, really do the research, find out, we can never replace the experience, but, you know, I've been devouring every book I can find on the subject. I have been trying so hard to educate myself so that I can be better informed, so that I can help my kids be better informed, so that I can be a better human, because I get that I'm really lucky. Mm-hmm. I am by
you know, yeah, I didn't mean to cut you off, but we're running out of time. And I wanted to say this too. I thank you for coming here. I thank you for being open. I thank you for being vulnerable. I thank you for talking. I thank you for having the conversation, because that's what we do here. And we all walk away as friends. So I invite you, Bree, if you ever want to come back, we're here Wednesdays at 10 a.m. Pacific, 1 p.m. Eastern. That's how we wrote Lamont and Salim in. They were like, hey, this is fun. So please, please come back. The only thing I wanted to say about what you had to say about being lucky You know, I'm always one of those people that say, I'm not lucky, I'm blessed. So I think the luck in what you're doing is that you, you know, through chance, were born into that family. But I'm pretty sure in one way or another, there were your ancestors who decided to take action to make sure that you didn't have to go through these situations and it wasn't just dumb luck. We are coming down to the last few minutes of the show. And what I love to do at the end of every show is just simply allow my guests the opportunity to speak directly to the audience, to everyone who is watching the show live, as well as everyone who is watching in the archives, and simply let them know what you want them to take away from your appearance here today. We're going to start with you, Salim.
I just want to tell everybody, SalimAmirBey@gmail.com. I'm trying to do everything I can to re-educate America, re-nutrify America. And I mean, just look at people as human beings and just start telling the truth. Just start being comfortable with being uncomfortable and we'll be all right.
Yes, I appreciate it. I hope to see you next week. Salim, Bree, what do you have for us?
If you're like me and this is all a little hard for you, do the research, ask your friends, ask people what resources you can use. Come join, let's talk, get an education.
Yes, absolutely. We want to continue to have these conversations and be open and honest. Paul, what do you have for us?
What a show. Again, a very informative and open show without fighting, without anybody ending the show in anger or in...
I'm mad at you.
You're always mad at me. That doesn't count. It's just a question how far. look, we're able to talk about issues, learn, probe, and we didn't move further apart. I think if I, you know, I try and take this one word that someone said on every show, and Bria said it this time. It's like, you know, now we're talking about picking up garbage. And I think, you know, the garbage been there, but now we're picking up garbage. And I think it's interesting because the garbage has been around for a long time. People are interested in picking it up because it's getting closer to their front door. And deep. For a long, long time, maybe until now, the garbage was never at my front door. Bria, it was never at your front door. It was in certain areas. And now that the garbage is getting closer to our front doors, all of a sudden we want to clean up the garbage. So, you know, I take something from every show and obviously always, for some reason, the only one on the show giving homework. But love you guys all. And I love being here with you.
Okay, hold on. I felt a little shade. I felt just a little bit of shade in that comment. I don't do homework.
No, I'm do all the homework. I know I get assigned homework.
I know that's what I say. I don't get homework, but I do all of this. I bring it all together. I make it work. I make it live. I invite the people. Okay. I don't have time for homework. Yes. But you know what, Paul? Why don't you give Bree some homework?
Oh, yeah. You got to watch. Did you watch 13th?
Not yet. It's on my list for this weekend.
You got to watch that, which I loved. And then I'm in the middle of a book called the Anger, the Privilege Class. I'll give you the exact title. It's at my house because I don't keep it at work. So I'm going to send you, I'll connect with you because I get homework from Lamont. And
I would love that. Yeah.
And Salim hasn't given me a lot yet. We have to learn about the Black codes and Jim Crow. And I had to watch 13th and I watched Harriet, which was interesting. And now I'm going to do it today. I promised, we had a guest on who has a book about her being the token Black in her workplace. So I'm buying copies and making my wife's book club because they have a book club and I'm buying copies. I'm making them read it as their book club book. But again, the biggest homework I can give anybody is you don't have to be on a podcast or live to do this, to talk to people and be willing to learn and be willing to be wrong and to be willing to be challenged. Don't get angry about it. It's not about ego. It's about learning and getting better and understanding.
Yes, absolutely. I want to thank you all for being a guest on today's episode of Face to Face Talk Show. I learned a lot. We talked a lot. And like Paul said, we still all walk away as friends. I hope to see you all next week, 10 a.m. Pacific, 1 p.m. Eastern. And for everyone, we say it every week, but I'm going to say it especially this week because next Wednesday show, November 4th, I want everybody to come out, everybody to tune in because I know we're going to have a lot to say about what is going on in the world next Wednesday. So go to the website, asksharifah.com, click on Be a Guest, sign up for Face-to-Face Talk Show, and we'll hear what you have to say on Wednesday. Until then, everyone have a safe and a blessed week. Bye now.
You know, I'm